Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. New year, new decade. Be future ready with Zurich, the power behind your pension.
Pensions are now a major election issue, with voters concerned about being denied access to the state pension for two or more years after they retire, many of them at the age of 65. Sinn Féin is promising to lower the age for the state pension back to 65, while the Labour leader Brendan Howland says halting plans to increase the state pension age to 67 is a precondition for government. The other parties are promising various measures in their manifestos. We're going to dig deeper into this issue now with an expert in this area, Dr. Joe Larrigy from the Department of Social Policy in Maynooth. Good evening to you.
Good evening,
Mary. And I think, Joe, at the outset, it's probably worth going through maybe just a little bit of history. How did we get from what for many, many years was the accepted age for the state pension to kick in at 65 to 66 now, 67 next year and a promise, 66 now, 67 next year, isn't it, and a promise of 68 from 2028?
Well, the very long story is that originally state pensions tended to go towards 65 during the 1930s in the United States with the Social Security Act, and that norm became established internationally. But Ireland only reached that point in the 1970s with a series of reductions in the state pension age, which had originally been at 70 from 1908. So effectively what we have seen is that since 2011, we have had legislation which is providing for an increase in the state pension eligibility age. Yeah. And that first kicked in, in 2014 when the what was originally the retirement pension, which you could always claim from 65, was effectively abolished, and the next option was the state pension at 66,
yeah.
And this pension age then became the base, and in 2021 that is going to increase again to 67 years, and a further increase in 2028 to 68 years.
And Joe, I suppose it is also worth remembering that there is a big percentage of people who are told they don't have occupational pensions, so they are dependent on the state pension. And it really sticks in their craw, I think, people who will have worked all their lives, that they're being asked to claim job seekers allowance between the ages of 65 and 66, or 67 as the case may be, from next year.
Oh, absolutely. I think it does stick in the craw, and the nearer we get to that age, the more we dread it. But there is a kind of maybe a stigma attached to becoming a job seeker at 65 when you've worked all your life, and but there are a number of downsides. Well, first of all, income is going to fall. The state pension is a long-term benefit, and as you say, it is the safety net for everybody. So it's the key thing for people who don't have an occupational pension. And if that's cut by approximately 40 or 50 euros, depending on the differential between the state pension and the job seeker's benefit, that's a real material cut, and that's going to affect people's exposure to poverty. And we must remember that job seekers' benefit was devised as a short-term benefit. It's really for people who are looking for work and between jobs. And we would be concerned if people were unemployed for a year and more. So to introduce the scheme in order to try and ostensibly to get people to extend their working lives, that adds 3 years to the claiming of job seekers' benefit or job seekers' allowance, is to impose a very harsh regime indeed.
Joe, are there realities, though, that have to be faced in terms of affordability? I mean, is it true to say that the Social Insurance Fund, which would fund state pensions, is just not going to be able to sustain continuing to pay the state pension, even at the 66 age that it is currently at?
Well, there are a lot of options, and there's certainly more than one way to approach this problem. We could certainly look at options like increasing contributions to fund the state pension. After all, the state does give a lot of money in the form of tax expenditures, which enables people on higher incomes to obtain an incentive towards putting money by for a funded pension.
You mean the tax breaks that are given to occupational pensions?
Yeah, that's okay. One option, and it has been shown that this does really benefit the higher income groups disproportionately, and this could be looked at more rigorously. But there are other elements. First, there is, of course, increasing the size of the social insurance contribution. Many people would balk at that and say, well, that's not sustainable. But in fact, if we're facing a demographic aging of the population, somehow pensions have to be paid for. And whether they're paid through a social insurance system or a private occupational pension system combined with that, or indeed exclusively some type of private regime, which of course I wouldn't support, it still has to be paid for, and you're still going to have the same number of older people. So one way or another, it's how you manage and develop and devise your pension system. And I think that, you know, we do need to look at pension age, but not in a rigid way. We need to develop a flexible approach that takes into account the realities in people's lives, and that, in fact, can get the benefit of extended working lives where it's appropriate.
I suppose the state would say they're already doing that by now extending the age of retirement out to 70 in the public service.
Well, that's a good move in the sense that
there is flexibility there now.
Yeah, so for public servants, this is a step forward. And, of course, it's a good example to other employers. But in the rest of the economy, it's largely a voluntary or negotiable, a movable feast. There are many cases of people challenging retirement age in the Labour Relations Commission and the courts and so on. And you know, these point to the ragged nature of the way in which this has been developed and the extent to which the gap has opened up. And people are trying to catch up by addressing the problem when they're told that it's their retirement time.
Is there a danger here, though, that perhaps we're conflating two things? We're conflating pension age and the age of retirement.
Absolutely. I think that's a key issue. They're two distinct things. And we need to have a policy approach that dovetails the two together. And really, in fact, to simply raise the retirement age, or the pension age, I should say, in this way, is not the recommended approach internationally, and certainly in the European Community. In its white paper in 2012, they recommended that we develop a flexible approach to retirement, so that if you have a normal retirement age, you also have a window around that where people can retire earlier or later. And you can create incentive structures around a normal retirement age to incentivize people who are able to work longer and willing and motivated to work longer to do so. And at the same time, you can encourage people to extend to retirement age by tapering the payment that they receive. Mm. So there are various ways to deal with this. And flexible retirement is not just doable economically, it's also much more beneficial in terms of people's social needs.
There's probably another reality as well. I mean, there is thankfully, the great reality that we are all living longer. But there are other realities, I suppose, that need to be considered as well. We're saddled with mortgages. Many people long after the sort of accepted mid-60s retirement age these days. And, you know, taking into account of the changing lifestyles, second marriages, marriage breakdowns, children arriving in second relationships with the needs to provide for them.
Yeah, I mean, we really have two areas of policy here. One is pensions policy and the other is housing policy. And they have been developed without much reference to each other over decades. But they have both been developing in the same direction. In other words, more and more emphasis on self-provision or private provision. And the irony is that in the case of the housing sector, what we've actually seen is the goal of home ownership as a universal thing has been undermined by that very policy itself. Because home ownership rose in the 1990s Home ownership rose until the 1990s, and it has been in decline as a proportion of all forms of tenure since 1991. And that may even have contributed to the crisis in 2008 and has certainly deepened and worsened since then. So the upcoming age cohorts, the people in their 30s and 40s now, will be faced with a scenario in their old age where they are much more likely to be either in private rental accommodation or still paying off the mortgage, as you say, and that's in the kind of more favourable. And so the proportion of people who will be outright owners by the time they're 65 is falling and will fall dramatically. So this puts another difficulty into the equation.
Indeed. Dr. Joe Larrigy from the Department of Social Policy in Maynooth, thank you very much indeed today